When Kyle Bass, a Texas hedge fund manager who'd successfully bet against subprime mortgages, started buying gold bricks and building a fortified ranch with sniper posts, most people thought he was paranoid. "This isn't the end," he warned in 2008. "It's just the beginning of the sovereign collapse." While the world celebrated economic recovery, Bass understood something profound. The financial crisis hadn't disappeared. It had merely transferred from private balance sheets to public ones. This insight forms the backbone of Boomerang, where financial disaster becomes a revealing mirror, reflecting each nation's deepest cultural traits and hidden flaws. When offered easy money, societies don't just make financial decisions, they express their fundamental character in ways that are both fascinating and terrifying. Iceland transformed from a fishing nation to a financial powerhouse almost overnight. In 7 years, Icelandic banks grew their assets from $10 billion to $140 billion, 12 times the country's GDP. Young fishermen abandoned generations-old traditions to become currency traders, often moving directly from boats to trading desks without financial training. The culprit was the same Viking-like appetite for risk that had served Icelanders well for centuries. "We are risk-takers. We are not afraid to fail. It's in our blood," explained one hedge fund manager. This fearlessness led to absurd decisions. Investment groups with no airline experience buying stakes in American Airlines, $100 million handshake loans, and entrepreneurs acquiring British retail chains with borrowed money. While Icelanders borrowed to conquer foreign businesses, Greeks used debt to transform their government into a piñata of benefits. When George Papakonstantinou became finance minister in 2009, he discovered Greece's deficit wasn't 3.7% of GDP as reported, but nearly 14%. Greece's problems extended to uncollected taxes. Tax collectors accepted bribes, and the government removed collectors during elections to avoid angering voters. An estimated 30 billion euros were evaded annually in a country with a 100 billion budget. Wealthy doctors reported minimal incomes, and only 324 citizens admitted owning swimming pools, while satellite imagery revealed over 16,000 in Athens suburbs alone. What happens when Europe's poorest country becomes its second richest without experiencing normality in between? After centuries of poverty, Ireland's economic miracle in the 1990s felt like a magic spell. When unlimited credit appeared in the early 2000s, the Irish were uniquely vulnerable. Unlike America's complex housing bubble, Ireland's was more transparent. While American bankers profited as their banks failed, Irish executives like Sean Fitzpatrick of Anglo-Irish Bank went down with their institutions, investing in their own banks' bonds until collapse. The traditionally pessimistic Irish had discovered dangerous optimism. As economist Colm McCarthy explained, everyone in Ireland had the idea that somewhere in Ireland there was a little wise old man who was in charge of the money. And then they saw him and said, "Who the fuck was that?" That's when everyone panicked. By 2006, over 20% of Irish workers built houses. Construction comprised nearly 25% of GDP, and Dublin home prices had risen 500% since 1994. When Professor Morgan Kelly saw former students as bank economists predicting a soft landing, he knew something was wrong, but newspapers initially rejected his warnings. By summer 2011, Germany had become Europe's financial moral arbiter as the largest creditor to struggling nations. "If we say no, it's no. Nothing happens without Germany. This is where the losses come to live," a Bundesbank official explained. Yet Germany embodied a profound contradiction. While Germans rejected credit temptations domestically, their banks enabled the very excesses they condemned abroad. German banks lost billions across Iceland, 21B, Ireland, 100B, U.S. subprime bonds, 60B, and Greece, all while maintaining restraint at home. The Germans' rule-following nature made them vulnerable to riskless assets. They trusted AAA ratings without examining underlying securities. Unlike American traders who profited while destroying their firms, German bankers earned modest salaries, suggesting genuine ignorance of their risks. "For 40 years, we didn't lose a penny on anything with a AAA rating," lamented Commerzbank chairman Klaus-Peter Müller. "I did not believe there would be email traffic between investment bankers saying they were selling dirt." When the U.S. credit rating was downgraded in 2011, Treasury bond prices paradoxically soared and interest rates fell to record lows. Unlike European countries trapped in cycles of doubt and rising borrowing costs, the U.S. government maintained a blank check. The shakier it appeared, the more cheaply it could borrow. Beneath this paradox lay troubling realities. Financial analyst Meredith Whitney uncovered that from 2002 to 2008, states had doubled their debt, increased spending by two-thirds, and underfunded pensions by $1.5 trillion. These pension funds relied on unrealistic 8% returns while shifting toward riskier investments. California exemplified these problems. Arnold Schwarzenegger entered office with 70% approval ratings and a mandate to fix California's finances. He left with ratings below 25%, having accomplished little. "I was operating under common sense," Schwarzenegger explained. "The voters recalled Davis. The voters elected me. So voters would hand me the tools to do the job. But the other side convinced voters to take those tools away." Vallejo, California, exemplified America's financial dysfunction after declaring bankruptcy in 2008. The city halved police and fire departments and eliminated other services due to unsustainable public safety compensation consuming 80% of the budget. City manager Phil Batchelor identified the problem as cultural rather than financial, the same selfishness driving the subprime crisis. "It's not just a coincidence that the debts of cities and states spun out of control at the same time as the debts of individual Americans," he noted. UCLA neuroscientist Dr. Peter Weibrow theorized that America's societal dysfunction paradoxically stemmed from its success. "Humans aren't neurologically equipped for extreme abundance. Human beings are wandering around with brains that are fabulously limited," he explained. "We've got the core of the average lizard, a reptilian core driving resource acquisition and making self-regulation difficult amid abundance. When people accumulate unpayable debts, they prioritize present wants over future hardship. Yet, as irrational as optimism sometimes appears, it often pays off." The global financial crisis revealed national character through money. Americans built oversized homes amid predatory lending. Icelanders abandoned fishing for banking. Germans became more rigidly rule-focused. The Irish embraced property speculation optimistically. Greeks turned government into a cash dispenser. The boomerang effect was devastating. Boom year excesses returned as sovereign debt crises, austerity measures, and social upheaval. Nations that most enthusiastically embraced financial excess suffered worst. Hope emerged through individuals like Morgan Kelly in Ireland, who predicted the property crash when no one listened, and through reforms across Europe and America. Financial systems reflect human nature's complexity. The same ingenuity creating prosperity can cause disaster without proper constraints. Our adaptability offers hope through learning from mistakes and building sustainable systems. Perhaps our most valuable lesson is that our greatest vulnerabilities hide within our most cherished national traits, but recognizing them is the first step toward genuine resilience.